You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Breaking! Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer declares gay sex club essential business, endorses glory holes, must credit PJ Media. PJ Media is a conservative news slash right-wing outrage slash alternative reality website. So that's a lie. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer has not endorsed glory holes. I have, more in theory than in practice, but Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, she has not endorsed sticking your dick in a hole in a wall and getting a blowjob from the stranger on the other side. But PJ Media would like you to believe that Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer personally ordered Club Taboo, a sex club in the back of a sex toy shop in Lansing, Michigan, the state's capital, that she personally ordered Club Taboo to remain open while yanking licenses out of the hands of God-fearing small business owners who just want to make an honest living. Or as PJ Media put it, Whitmer allowed a gay swingers club with glory holes to operate right under her nose in Lansing, while at the same time aiming her business-killing death ray on 77-year-old barber Carl Mankey for giving haircuts. Do I need to mention that Whitmer did no such thing? Or did identifying PJ Media as a right-wing outrage shop clear that up already? Carl Mankey, the barber whose license got death-rayed, got his license death-rayed after he made a show of reopening his shop. The media was invited to come. Armed members of the Michigan militia stood guard outside, ready to shoot cops, I guess? Because blue lives don't matter anymore. Please make a note of it. Anyway, the antics outside Mankey's shop brought him to the attention of the authorities, which was his intention, and the authorities then moved to shut Mankey's shop back down. Because there's a pandemic raging. 50,000 people in Michigan have already been infected, and more than 5,000 are dead. Governor Whitmer wasn't aware that Club Taboo was still open for business, although all those glory holes were operating right under her nose. The media and armed members of the Michigan militia weren't gathering inside or outside Club Taboo. But as soon as authorities learned Club Taboo was open in violation of the state stay-at-home orders, they shut it down too. But that didn't happen. Club Taboo wasn't shut down until after PJ Media started asking the hard questions. Questions like, where are you more likely to get a disease? At a barber shop or in a sex dungeon? Huh. Well, it's hard to assess the relative risks here. More people probably get haircuts in Lansing in any given week than slip into Club Taboo for a blowjob. And while not at all safe, it's probably safer to have some stranger breathing all over your dick than it is to have some barber breathing right in your face. And places like Club Taboo rarely have more than two or three people in them at any given time. But one hairstylist in Missouri who had COVID-19 and went to work at a salon managed to expose 91 people, 84 clients and 7 coworkers to the virus. So the framing here, basically PJ Media wants us to believe, well, not us, not me, not you. They want their idiot readers to believe that the state's Democratic governor is so beholden to the gay lobby that she refused to shut down a gay sex club until she had to, which is ridiculous. Keeping sex clubs open during pandemics isn't high on the list of any gay political organization's goals. You could say we learned our lesson the last time. And most of the people who patronize establishments like Club Taboo, which is housed in the back of a dirty bookstore, don't identify as gay. You're far likelier to encounter a dues-paying member of the Michigan militia in the darkroom of a dirty bookstore in Lansing than you are a dues-paying member of the Human Rights Campaign. I did a bit of digging and didn't find any mention of COVID-19 infections being traced back to Club Taboo. That doesn't mean there weren't any. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence and all that. If a member of the Michigan militia came down with COVID-19 after visiting Club Taboo, they probably claim they got it at church. And it does seem pretty easy to catch at church. More than 40 people who recently attended a church service in Frankfurt, Germany tested positive for COVID-19. Forbes reports that in Arkansas, nearly half the congregation of a small rural church, dozens and dozens of people, contracted the virus after attending services on one Sunday in March. A church in Texas had to close after the virus spread, and in Virginia, and I'm just quoting from Forbes here, not taking any delight in this, a pastor who held church services throughout March against the advice of health officials and told congregants he would continue unless I am in jail or the hospital, died from COVID-19 in April. The data aren't all in yet, but if you're forced by Governor Whitman to choose between an anonymous blowjob and a sermon, the blowjob in the sex club at the Glory Hole from the Michigan militia member looks like the far safer bet. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and in the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, kink educator Blackson joins us to take some of your kink questions. And I want to remind everybody that we are doing a Savage Lovecast live stream. We often do Savage Lovecast live where we go to theaters in different cities all around the country, but we can't do that right now. So we are doing Savage Lovecast live stream on June 4th. I'll be taking your questions live, giving answers. Nancy will be there. It's going to be really fun. I will be visiting you in your homes. And it is a fundraiser. Tickets cost $10, but it is a fundraiser for Northwest Harvest, which helps to supply food banks all across my home state of Washington. I am matching, Terry and I are matching personally, the first $2,000 in ticket sales and donations so that we can double the amount that we're raising for Northwest Harvest doing the Savage Love live stream. Again, that's June 4th. Go to savagelovecast.com and click on events for tickets. This episode is brought to you by Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that your butt will love and everyone who loves your butt will love too. Visit www.hellotushy.com for 10% off your entire order when you use the promo code SAVAGE. Stop wiping and start washing.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode is brought to you by Allform, premium customizable sofas and chairs shipped right to your door. For 20% off your perfect sofa, go to allform.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I was calling to share a quarantine story. My wife and I, we've been married for almost 20 years now. It's evolved in different ways. One of the things that I have enjoyed doing more recently is going out to parties that involve glory holes. I was recently talking to my wife about these are not going on anymore, about kind of one of the reasons I like about them is that it's not an aggressive act maybe on women so much, which is how some people might perceive them, but sort of like giving yourself to whatever happens on the other side. So we found some old bed sheets from our kids that we weren't going to use anymore, cut a hole in them, and I sewed up an end, set up a curtain rod, and we set up a little spot in our house where we have a little bit of a little glory hole, and found that as a very fun activity in recent months.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your very fun and very creative quarantine sex story. Props to you and the wife for having the kind of honest, open relationship where you can talk about this stuff and get creative if you are deprived of the stuff that you enjoy getting elsewhere, usually allowed to get elsewhere. And when you say giving yourself to whatever happens on the other side, yeah, that is literally what you're doing when you pop your dick through a glory hole. That is why I haven't ever popped my dick through a glory hole, because I don't trust people on the other side of a wall that I can't see as much as you do. Thank you so much for calling. If you want us to play your quarantine sex story on the top of next week's show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064, and share your story.
Hey, Dan, I was calling about actually with my own question regarding another question you had last week about the poor man who lost his leg and the wife who had lost her libido, relating her, at least her attraction to the man after that. In terms of, I guess, options, what they can do to resolve this, I never hear you talk about this, but what about a sex doll? I have one and I use it and I find it meets the needs that I'm not getting met from my wife. I just feel like it's something you never talk about, and I just wonder what your opinion and your audience's opinion about this, because I feel like it's not something you and people in general never talk about. I guess it's feel of the lack of intimacy or something. People just don't like the fact that it's just a piece of whatever, and yet I get my needs met from it. It's an option, I think. And the other thing is, I guess, in terms of what I should be looking out for in terms of materials for these dolls I get. I just want to know if there's a way to test them to be sure that they're made of the material that's safe. I know that TPE and silicone are supposed to be safe. I'm just wondering if there's any way to have them tested or know, or some way to know that these materials are safe or where they say they are. Because, well, if they come from overseas, and I never know if it's legitimate or not. I don't think that cheating is always the option that people put it out to. I don't feel like I want to cheat or feel like the need to cheat with her, go out with the sex worker. It's just, or anybody else. It's just, I just can't do it.
Why don't I ever recommend full-size human sex dolls? Well, I don't know. It doesn't seem like a realistic option for many people, considering that they start at $6,000. I recommend a couple of couples counseling sessions to someone. I recommend, or we have Erica Moen from Oh Joy Sex Toy on. She recommends a vibrator that costs $100, and I get 1,000 emails from people telling me that we're being classist and not everybody has the money to go see a couples counselor for a session or two, or invest in a $100 vibrator that might last for 10 or 20 years. The idea that I could just casually toss off to people, hey, there's this $6,000 and up sex toy that you might want to give a chance. Yeah, I'm probably not going to go there, not even just for the cost, but also for a lot of people, the idea of their partner having a spare, having a Stepford girlfriend in the basement that they occasionally visit, is going to be off-putting. So props to your wife that that's not an issue for her, and that she's happy that you have this full-size sex toy into which you can insert yourself. The only real question you have, besides why don't I ever recommend that, is how do you figure out what's in your sex toy? Well, you have to go with a reputable supplier. You have to go with some company that makes a particular sex toy and has a good reputation and that assures its customers that indeed it's only using silicone. And then trust, unless you want to cut a little bit off that sex toy and send it to an independent lab to have it tested, which is what the wonderful sex toy shop Smitten Kitten in Minnesota started doing a few years ago. They tested sex toys and found that some of the companies that were less reputable were claiming their products were all silicone or all safe materials, and they were not. But the FDA doesn't regulate sex toys. A lot of them are produced overseas and on the fly, and it's a buyer beware situation. Go to badvibes.org for more information about sex toy testing. And if you want to double check now, all these years later, after you've spent this money on your very expensive sex doll, to see if it's made of whatever it was the manufacturer assured you it was made of, you're going to have to find an independent lab and send them a tow. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you have heard me talk about my Helix mattress and how much I love it. Exciting news, Helix is now going beyond the bedroom. They've started to make terrific sofas. They just launched a new company called Allform, and they're making premium customizable sofas and chairs that they ship right to your door. We are all staying home right now. We are all sitting on our butts. We're all parking it, and you want a nice and comfortable place to park it, and these sofas are comfortable and cool. And what makes Allform sofas really cool? For starters, it's the easiest way you can customize the sofa using premium materials and at a fraction of the cost of traditional stores. You pick your fabric. It's spill stain and scratch resistant. You pick the sofa color, color of the legs, sofa size, and shape to make sure it's perfect for you and perfect for your home. They've got armchairs and love seats all the way up to an 8-seat sectional, so there's something there for everyone. And you can always start small and buy more seats later on if you want your Allform sofa to grow and change when you move. Allform sofas are also delivered directly to your home with fast, free shipping. In the past, if you wanted to order a sofa, it could take weeks or even months to arrive, and you would need someone to come assemble it in your home. Allform takes just 3 to 7 days to arrive in the mail, and you can assemble it yourself in a few minutes. No tools required. We actually have an Allform love seat set up right here in the Savage Lovecast studio. It's simple. It's a cool light blue color, and it is incredibly comfortable. I have napped on it recently myself. I can't, however, claim that I set it up.
I set it up. I did it. Me, Nancy, I built that couch.
You are the handy one. Was it hard?
No, it was so easy. They've got some cool, like, you just screw everything in. It's easier than that other big box store that you can buy furniture from. It's even easier than that.
And lovelier, far lovelier.
Much lovelier. Yeah, we like it. It's great. We've got a studio couch. We're like grown-ups now.
I've actually taken naps on the floor in our studio when I needed to take a nap because I'm old and I need to nap. But now I don't have to lay on the floor anymore thanks
floor
to
no
all
more.
Form. If getting a sofa without trying it in the store sounds a little risky, you don't need to worry. You get 100 days to decide if you want to keep it. That's more than 3 months. And if you don't love your All Form sofa, and you will, you're going to love it. But if you don't, they'll pick it up free and give you a full refund. They also have a forever warranty, literally forever. To find your perfect sofa, check out allform.com/savage. And Allform is offering 20% off all orders for our listeners at allform.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 24-year-old in the Northwest. I was talking to a long-term family friend and his brother over voice chat, and it was going well. His brother, he asked, does she know? And I was like, do I know what? And he kind of chuckled and he was like, send her the link, send it to her. And he sent me a link. It was of my uncle's long-term girlfriend in a porn video. And it sprung up this conversation like, I bet he doesn't know. I'm just waiting for a time to bring it up. I don't know how. I told your mom. It's circulating in the family. Family knows. And my question is, should anyone be bringing that up? Sex work is work. And I'm sure he knows. I just don't think he knows we know. And is there appropriate way or time to even bring that up to somebody? Should I tell my family friend to cram it down and pretend they didn't see anything?
On the one hand, sex work is work, like you say, and work shouldn't come with some terrible stigma attached to it. Sex work is work. It's a job. Some people do it. Some people enjoy it. Some people don't enjoy it, want to do something else, and hopefully can move out of it quickly. But sex work is work, and people who do sex work shouldn't be discriminated against, shamed, stigmatized. If we lived in a world where people who did sex work weren't shamed or stigmatized or discriminated against or disowned by their families, there would be no issue here. You could say to your uncle, oh, I saw your girlfriend's work. Like, I saw your girlfriend waiting tables at that place I like, or I saw your girlfriend being an architect and building a building. It wouldn't matter. But because there is this stigma and shame, it matters. And so I kind of want to get in a time machine and punch in the face the first person in your family who found the video and started circulating it to other family members to determine what needed to be done. Nothing needed to be done. The person who saw the video first needed to shut the fuck up and click on some other porn video that they'd rather watch in place of the porn video featuring a relative. But now that the whole fucking family knows, now that every friends know, yeah, your uncle probably needs to know all you all know, needs to know all you all are fucking assholes with no respect who don't know when to close a browser tab. So yeah, maybe he needs to know, or maybe you should do what you had the impulse to do, which is tell all of your relatives to fuck the fuck off and cram it down and pretend not to know this thing that they really didn't need to know in the first place, and that it might be an emotional burden for your uncle to know you know or be told that you know. The odds that his girlfriend, if she has a ton of videos up online, if this is what she does for work, is hiding that from him and has been hiding that from him for the entirety of their long-term relationship are very slim. So going to him and saying, oh my God, your girlfriend's doing porn, isn't going to be telling him anything that he doesn't know. It's just going to embarrass him potentially and humiliate him and might piss him the fuck off. And I'm really torn because on the one hand, you know, you should have just closed that fucking browser tab, the very first one of you who found it. On the other hand, it's nothing that she should be ashamed of. And if all y'all know, maybe he has a right to know all y'all know. So it can be addressed. And maybe he's stressed out all these years about the day that you all find out and the problems it might create. And if you've all found out and it didn't create really any problem except the burden of knowing, and you want to shift that burden of knowing onto his shoulders, maybe better if you told him. But the ideal solution here is the unworkable one, is the Dan Savage jumps in a time machine and finds the person who found that first video and slams their laptop shut and breaks all their fingers. People, there is no reason to hoard toilet paper. There is enough. You look ridiculous hoarding toilet paper. And you know what? Toilet paper is a terrible way to keep your butt clean anyway. You should switch to the Tushy Bidet. It's the modern bidet that cleans your tuchus way better than any toilet paper ever could. Using a precise stream of clean water, the Tushy Bidet cleanses your butt, washing away what toilet paper normally leaves smeared around on your behind, so you can walk away from every poop feeling fresh and confident. With a Tushy Bidet, you have one less thing to worry about. Plus, it's only $79. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy. Get yours at hellotushy.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm an early 30s male from Alberta, Canada, looking for some family advice. I have taken your advice from a previous episode where the caller's father was getting into a new relationship quite quickly after her mother died and was having an issue with Christmas dinner. I have a similar yet slightly different question around this topic. My mother passed away from colon cancer when I was 13 and my sister was 11 in January of 2001. It was a difficult time for us as her death, to us, was unexpected, while my father had known she was terminal for at least 6 months before she passed. It was made more difficult when my father decided to move on and date our current stepmother after 2 months and then have her move in with us 3 months after that, eventually getting married in the fall the year following. I heard your advice from episode 619 and have come to terms with the fact that he was ready for a relationship a lot sooner than we were because of him being a caregiver and not a spouse slash partner. My problem arises rather recently. My father is now quite ill, though not a terminal illness, and things have been rocky in the past with our stepmother, but are now generally smooth. I have found a love letter he wrote to our stepmother in July of 2014, where in the first line he writes, "We have been together for more than 14 years and married for 12. Whilst the marriage checks out, my sister and I were under the impression that he started seeing her 2 months after our mother died in March of 2001. Now it seems obvious that they had met before our mother passed and were well into a relationship at this point. I am now mature enough to understand open relationships, but I don't have any evidence to prove it, as my mother kept a pretty detailed diary in the year before her death and didn't mention this at all. How do I approach this with them? It seems like a pretty huge lie to cover up that they hoped would never come up in the last 20 years. Now that it is potentially almost in the open, what do we do? How do we handle it?"
You have your mother's diary from the last year of your mother's life, and there's nothing in there about being in an open marriage. There's nothing in there about her being aware that her husband was seeing someone else. And we can infer two things from that, that she didn't know. Also, that she wasn't in distress about her husband seeing someone else. Whatever your father was doing, obviously your father was dating your stepmother for at least a year before your mother passed. Whatever your father was doing, he was discreet about to such an extent that your mother never became aware that however many years into their marriage, he was perhaps doing what he needed to do to stay married and stay sane, that he was perhaps seeing other people. Maybe your father and mother were headed toward divorce. I imagine that would be in her diary, though, if that were true. And then your mother got sick and your father took care of your mother. And instead of informing his two young children, age 13 and 11 at the time, about this full, messy, complicated nature of the beginning of this relationship and the end of his previous marriage, his widowhood, the death of your mother, he just waited a couple of months to introduce you to this woman and then 3 more months to move her in. That seems like, it seemed to you at the time, I'm sure, and it seems to me perhaps now from this vantage point as a little fast, but he rolled it out in such a way so as not to complicate your memory of his relationship with your mother. And perhaps keeping this from you successfully all these years, and now because you read this letter, and I'd be curious to know how you came into possession of this letter and whether reading the letter was a violation of your father's privacy. But now because you read this letter, you know something that you didn't know and perhaps didn't need to know and would be better off not knowing. You can pretend not to know. You can will yourself to just accept that marriages are long and complicated, and there are sometimes periods in a long-term relationship. You don't know what the state of your parents' emotional relationship was at that time or their sexual relationship was at that time. But long and complicated marriages, there are sometimes affairs. There are sometimes accommodations that have to be made and sacrifices that have to be made. I don't know. You could have this conversation with your dad. You may hear from him that rather than leave your mother, and this was before she got sick, he began to see this other woman. Rather than leave your mother and abandon her with a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old, he did something that was morally compromising and complicated and amounted to a betrayal in service of, he thought at the time, the greater good of keeping your home together and keeping your parents together while you were young and vulnerable. Who knows? Maybe he was planning, after you were both 18 and out of the house, to make an honest man of himself retroactively and leave your mother and marry his girlfriend. There's all sorts of things that could have been going on. Is now the time to process those things with your desperately ill father? If you must, for your own peace of mind, go for it. You know what you now know, and you can't unknow it. You can, however, refrain from assuming the worst about your father and the worst about your stepmother, and perhaps allow for, relationships are long, marriages are complicated and often messy, that obviously your parents' marriage was more complicated, and whatever was going on in the last years of your mother's life was more complicated than you knew at the time or would have benefited from knowing at that time. You say your father kept this secret all these years. What would you rather have had him do? Bring this woman home 2 months after your mother's death and say, this is my girlfriend. We've been dating for 2 years, just so you know the full truth, just so I'm not keeping any secrets or hiding anything from you. Would that have been better for where you were at that moment? Yeah, it would have been better if your father hadn't been cheating on your mother, but we don't live in the world where your father wasn't cheating on your mother. And your father, rather than making a full confession, rather than burdening you as small children, 13 and 11, with the full 360-degree transparent awareness of what the fuck was going on, spared you that and would have successfully spared you that all your life if you hadn't have found and read that fucking letter. You know, the thing about snooping, whether you're snooping on an intimate partner or snooping on a parent, is sometimes you find out things that you can't unknow and you never needed to know. Sometimes you find out things you needed to know and had a right to know. That is why I'm one of the few people out there who will tell people that snooping retroactively can be justified in certain circumstances. You find out that your partner is a serial adulterer and is being unsafe and reckless and snorting meth. Yeah, you snooped, you found that out. Okay, the snooping is permissible in retrospect, retroactively. But sometimes you snoop and you find out a thing that it sucks to know, and you didn't need to know, and you wouldn't know if you hadn't snooped, and you need to take some responsibility for your mental anguish. And rather than offload your mental anguish onto your father who is ill, you just suck it up.
Many of us are changing the way we work or do business. If building a new website is part of that change for you, I recommend Squarespace. They make it easy to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store without having massive web design or coding skills. It's intuitive, simple to use, and genuinely the most efficient way to get a website up quickly. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. They have great-looking templates that you can just drop in and it looks good right away. You can collaborate with other members of your group, do an email blast, connect with social media, get set up with e-commerce. Pretty much anything you need for a website, Squarespace is way ahead of you and they've thoughtfully included it. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I am a 36-year-old non-binary queer person living in Philly, and I am in a long-term non-monogamous relationship. I'm about to move in with my anchor partner, and we are trying to figure out at what phase of the pandemic that we can date other people. So right now we kind of have our other dating on pause, and I'm sure there's a lot of other poly and ethically non-monogamous people that have the same question. Another layer to this is I have severe asthma, so I am high risk during this pandemic. And so do I have to wait until there's a vaccine to go fuck other people, or can we do it in the yellow phase? Do we have to like only date people who live alone?
Hey, it's Dan Savage returning your call.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I looked at my caller ID and I was like, I wonder if that's Dan Savage. It couldn't possibly be.
Whenever you don't answer the phone, anybody out there listening, whenever you don't answer the phone because you don't recognize the number, it's me. You missed my call.
Thanks for calling me back.
My pleasure. Did you listen to the opening of last week's show? I talked about Dutch health authorities' advice for single people around dating and sex, that sex is, you know, necessary and people are going to seek it out, and telling people they can't have it doesn't prevent people from having it, and, you know, ups the likelihood that people will seek it out more recklessly. And so they were advising people to find someone, vet that person, get a good idea about that person's, you know, how many contacts they have, because however many contacts they have increases the risk that if you two get together for sex, that you may wind up exposed. I guess the same advice would apply to people in poly relationships who want to have sex with other people. But right now, to me, doesn't seem like the time to start dating, because dating to me implies not seeking out one other person for you to fuck around with, or one other person for you and your partner to fuck around with, but, you know, picking chocolates from the box and sampling them and deciding maybe down the road which one you might want to partner with, if indeed you and your partner in your open relationship are going to have other partners as opposed to just, you know, other sexual sort of, oh God, why did I say sexual in that way? Other sexual contacts, you know, one-offs with others. So it would help to know what it is that you're seeking before I could give you advice about when it would be safe to seek it in this environment.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, I'm in a long-term, like, kind of poly relationship, and me and my primary partner aren't seeing anybody else right now. And I'm high risk and he's not. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to navigate, you know, at what point can we see other people for sex while also, you know, not being, I don't want to say, you know, we can't have sex with anybody else in 2020. You know, it's hard to predict what is going to happen with the vaccine. But as someone with severe asthma, how can, you know, I advise my partner on the risks that he can take too? Because, you know, we're about to move in together and we are only seeing each other in quarantine.
Right.
So essentially the risks that he is taking or would take if he could, are also risks that I am taking, and that I am more likely to die from COVID.
Which
and
is,
so I obviously don't want to die.
Nobody wants to die, and we don't want you to die.
And he had asked, like, well, what if I want to hook up with somebody that lives alone and has been quarantined for the past 2 months like we have, you know, and that's kind of more of a gray area. I'm kind of not sure what to say. I'm like, I don't know. Are they somebody that we know well?
Okay,
that we can
wait, slow down.
You know,
if that's somebody, you know, who's been quarantining for a couple of months and lives alone, had to go to the grocery store 2 days ago to get food, or had food delivered and touched the bag that was maybe touched by someone who had it, they could have the virus now despite having quarantined successfully for 2 months. And if your boyfriend goes and fucks them, it's just a real risk that can't be eliminated. That if he is meeting up with someone else who may have an incentive to lie to him about whether they've been quarantining or not, if they're hungry for his dick, there's risk there, and there's no way to eliminate that risk. And if you're at high risk of dying, if you guys should guess wrong or trust wrong in someone else,
yeah,
it may be a risk that it's not rational to run at the moment. And I always feel very conflicted about this. You know, we had Tristan Taormino on the show, you know, at the beginning of this crisis. She wrote Opening Up and has a terrific podcast herself, Sex Out Loud, and is an advocate for open polyamorous relationships. And she came on and we announced together, you know, we held hands and jumped off this cliff together, even though that violated social distancing, sort of. We announced together that polyamory for the moment is canceled, except virtually.
Yeah.
as we move forward, and it may be a long time before we have a vaccine, just telling people they can't or shouldn't won't prevent some people from taking that risk. You know, we've got to find a way to channel people's desires so that they can act on them in the safest way possible. And I think, you know, I would advise you, if you guys were going to take these risks, and they are risks, to be as safe as possible, which means if there's somebody else that you're interested in or he's interested in, you're going to have what amounts to a long cyber courtship before you take the risk of getting together physically. Establish trust. Not that trust is a vaccine. It doesn't make you immune. Establish trust so that when that person says, we've been quarantining for this amount of time, we're asymptomatic, I have only these numbers of contacts with others outside my home, that you can believe that you're not being bullshitted because somebody wants the D or the P in your case.
Yeah, I think it's tough as a sex positive, you know, non-monogamous person to tell your partner, hey, I don't know when you can have sex with other people again. And because it's not because I don't want him to date. It's just because I don't want to die. And so, you know, talking about when that would be safe, I'm kind of like, I don't know. When Philly goes into the green, we're still in the red lockdown phase.
Right.
So kind of like looking at the future, like at what point in the phased reopening can you have sex with people that you don't live with? And I don't think any of us have a good answer yet.
I certainly don't, which is why I'm all over the place on this question. You know, I recognize people's basic, not just need, but right to physical intimacy, sexual expression, sexual fulfillment, sexual contact. But there is now an added degree of risk and an added degree of difficulty when it comes to mitigating for that risk. You know, HIV, talk about it a lot. HIV, I was out there having sex in the 80s when there was no effective treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But the risks were easier to manage. Not that people who were attempting to manage those risks of contracting HIV then didn't, you know, wind up getting infected and dying in some cases. They did. I could have. You know, I was a couple of broken condoms away, or maybe one broken condom away from being infected myself and dying in 1992. But I lucked out, and I recognize that there's a certain amount of luck built into that too, into surviving a pandemic, the one I survived. There's going to be a certain amount of luck and risk going forward when people start having sex despite this pandemic. And the trouble for someone in my position, you have to give people sex advice is, you know, I've always said that sex is the one area where we talk about risk as if it means you shouldn't do this thing. There's risk inherent in getting on an airplane before COVID. People go snowboarding and slam into trees and die. People eat chicken salad and die, right? There's risk to chicken salad. And we don't say, you know, the only safe chicken salad is the chicken salad you don't eat. We say refrigerate that shit, you know, wash the counter after you cut up the chicken, be safe and responsible and mitigate those risks and minimize them. But we don't tell people not to eat chicken salad. But with sex, we tell people don't do it because of sex phobia and sex irrationality, really, that sex is something trivial and as opposed to a basic human need and drive for 99% of us. And so, yeah, there's a certain point where people are going to start doing this and to mitigate the risks of COVID, particularly for, I have asthma, you have asthma, particularly for people like us who are in open relationships and polyamorous relationships, to mitigate those risks, it's going to be more of a tightrope walk. It's going to be harder than it was to mitigate the risks of contracting HIV in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, I also was like, hey, maybe we just need to wait and see, like we need to get to the green phase and like see how it is.
Right.
Like, you know, we also don't know.
And when we get to the green phase, people are still going to be contracting COVID and dying in the absence of an effective treatment or a vaccine. So just getting to green doesn't mean jump on all the dick, getting to green and we'll only get to green and we'll only stay in green if people continue to be smart and careful. And I think some people have it in their heads that once we get to green, there are no rules and we can go back to how it was.
Yeah.
And that is probably not going to be the case for a long time. And I said all that about, you know, like, I'm the pro risk guy. And I think, you know, assuming some risk for sex is legitimate and people should be able to have sex even in the face of risk. And yet I want to tell you, and I am going to tell you, that you and your partner should just fuck each other right now. And talk about fucking other people. You can talk to other people online. You can meet up with other people online virtually and have four ways. On Zoom, you can have 400 ways. But right now, you said you're in Philly. You're in a red zone. Yeah, right now. I understand the impulse to want to have sex with other people. Honest to God, I do. But right now, I can't, and you shouldn't. I can't tell you you can't. Well, I'm not in charge of your pussy in that way or your partner's dick.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't.
Well, once we get a vaccine, I want to make out with half of Philadelphia. I'm ready. But,
you know, once we get a vaccine.
But I'm going to wait until then.
Once we get a vaccine, I will make out with the other half of Philadelphia so that all of Philadelphia is made out with immediately, pronto. But that will be after we get a vaccine.
Awesome. I really appreciate the advice. I think you confirming what I was already thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. One asthmatic to another. I think you should err on the side of caution at this moment. Err on the side of not monogamy the choice, but monogamy the reality.
Yeah. Yeah. I told our couples therapist, but even Dan Savage said that polyamory was canceled right now. So I've been listening hard to all of your answers to be like, what are people doing?
Or not doing. Thank you so much. It was a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Dan. I recently accidentally connected with somebody on Tinder who I usually wouldn't connect with. I like to use Tinder to make new friends. I also like to flirt with girls on Tinder. It's just kind of a fun pastime. But somehow I matched with this person who identified as non-binary with she, her pronouns, and they presented as pretty masculine, but obviously said that they were non-binary, used she, her pronouns, but generally isn't really like my type. I usually go for straight looking, kind of, I would say like a Cher from Clueless type, like really super femmy. And so this was just like not really my type of person. I'm not usually attracted to this kind of person, but I am so worried that I am going to say the wrong thing. I probably already said the wrong thing here. I don't know how to tell somebody I'm not really attracted to you, especially when it's like, I don't really want to be with somebody with a dick. I just don't know like what the right thing is to say in this situation. By still being supportive and an ally and not using the wrong language or hurting anybody's feelings. Do I just ghost next time? Because I think I like put my foot in my mouth and I just feel like I need help here. Hopefully somebody can help me out with the correct language and what I should do in the future if this happens. Just unconnect? What do I do?
We'll open this one up to the callers, but I'd just like to say, nobody is obligated to like dick. And I say that as a fan. Nobody likes dick more than I like dick, but I know that there are people out there who don't like dick. And that's sad for some people who have dicks, who are attracted to people, or like to date people or get with people who just aren't into dicks. But not being into dicks is a perfectly legitimate sexual orientation. And you don't have to be embarrassed or ashamed of not liking dick. When you find yourself talking with somebody, you know, you meet them on Tinder or wherever, and you determine that you're not interested in them for whatever reason, you say, hey, it was nice talking to you, but I'm going to take a pass. I'm not interested. If that person demands to know exactly why you aren't interested in them, if they want to have an argument about it, they're not entitled to an answer. You don't need someone's permission to move on. And if somebody starts to argue with you about why exactly you're not interested in them, I think that's just a block, and blocking ain't ghosting. You're blocking someone who's being unpleasant. You're blocking someone who isn't taking no for an answer. And not taking no for an answer is a much worse offense than not being into dicks. So you can just tell her that you're not into dick. And if she freaks the fuck out, that's unpleasant, but too bad. You didn't do anything, in my opinion, wrong. All that said, sometimes we do need to challenge our preconceptions about what is and isn't attractive. Sometimes we are attracted to, and I don't say this to say to lesbians, you have to suck dick, or to say to gay men, you have to eat pussy, or to say to straight guys, you have to suck dick or anything. But sometimes we move through our young lives, getting with the people, not that we want to get with in particular, or not with all of the different kinds of people we might enjoy getting with, but we get with the people that we've been told we ought to get with and should be attracted to. That can shape us in a way that limits and distorts our options. And so we do want to interrogate our own desires, because we may find we're attracted to more different types of people, but racially, and people of different classes and socioeconomic backgrounds. There's a lot of conditioning, social conditioning around class that needs to be challenged. And a lot of it gets sort of pounded into our erotic imaginations in a very weird and distorting way. So it's not just about gender, but about everything. You need to be thoughtful. You need to interrogate your desires just to make sure that they're actually yours. But once you've determined that, you don't have to apologize for being attracted to the people that you're attracted to. You don't. And you're allowed to make it clear to people that you're not attracted to, that you are not attracted to them. And you don't have to win an argument. That person is free to challenge you if they think you're being a bigot or an asshole. And you're free to take that in, process it, decide whether there's any germ of truth to it, and then move the fuck on to someone you are attracted to who isn't arguing with you about the legitimacy of your desire.
Yeah, hey there, Dan. I kind of hold my voice down, so bear with me. My wife's in the other room. So I'm almost a 60-year-old male, been in a monogamous relationship now for the last 35 years with the same wonderful woman. And, well, tonight was, decided to go upstairs earlier than normal. And one thing led to the other, and she started giving me oral sex. And I finally stopped after I came seven times. I guess I really don't have a question. I just figured I'd probably just call up and tell you that.
Well, thank you for sharing. I don't know what is rarer, the person who's been married for 35 years, getting a blowjob from the spouse or coming seven times. The multi-orgasmic male is very, very rare. I've met a couple of guys who have no refractory period. They have an orgasm. They stay hard. They can immediately have another orgasm. They don't have that fall off in desire. Their dicks don't go soft. But to get to that next orgasm still takes some time. It's not like the next orgasm just rolls in on top of the previous one the way it does for many multi-orgasmic women. So you have remarkable orgasmic capacity, about which you should be rightly proud. And one question that I have for you, if the wife was there and the wife gave you this blowjob, why are you whispering about this to me with your wife in the other room? Why are you afraid of your wife overhearing you? Is it that you're calling me to share, or is there some other reason you don't want the wife busting you right now? All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. Emily Ann tweets, since calendars are pretty much meaningless nowadays, I use the Savage Lovecast as a way to mark the passage of time, as in, thank God it's Tuesday, there's a new Lovecast. And how many days has it been since I listened to the Savage Lovecast last? Glad we can help you keep track of time, Emily Ann. And if you want Tuesday to come more often, you can subscribe to the Savage Lovecast, become a Magnum subscriber at savagelovecast.com, and it gives you access to all 14 years worth of Savage Lovecasts. Every day can be Tuesday. Siobhan Nicole tweets, catching up on my podcast today, and Dan Savage just called God Sky Daddy, and now I am dead. Sorry about your death, Siobhan. And finally, AVN award-winning porn performer, producer, and director Sin Sage tweets, do not ever put sugar in your vagina. Yeast loves sugar, and they will get hideous yeast infections if they put actual sugar in their vaginas. I did a movie where a cupcake got shoved in my ass, and the yeast infection was the worst ever. Okay, Sage, I will take your advice. I will not put sugar in my vagina, I promise. And I will use a stunt double anytime a scene calls for someone to shove a cupcake up my ass, which frankly to me seems like a waste of both cupcake and ass, but kinks are mysteries. And pleasure is subjective. All right. If you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm a late 20s bisexual married female. I'm actually just calling to respond to the gentleman who's married to the military member. Yeah, I'm military. I've been deployed. When I was gone last, my wife and I, who is also bisexual, decided that we would, when I get back, talk more about opening up our marriage, and yeah, we have a boyfriend now, and whenever I leave for any period of time, it's been really nice for her to have him around, and recently it's escalated. He's moved in with us. I guess my feedback for the caller is that if his husband is not willing to meet him halfway, then there's some tough decisions he has to make. I went from being full-time to a reservist, and now I get to live my dream job, still be in the military, and still have my family. Whereas if I stayed active duty, I could have lost one or the other. So my advice is to talk to him about the reserves and the guard. If he wants to keep his marriage alive, he might have to do part-time military so he can have a full-time husband.
Hi, I'm calling about the woman whose boyfriend is jacking off but not having sex with her. Dan, I think you hit a lot of the right points, but maybe with the wrong emphasis. I really think that this boyfriend is just depressed. Like, he just got laid off. None of us have the same coping mechanisms available to us during coronavirus. You know, you two are still having sex twice a week. Like, I think that you still have a sexual connection. I don't think that he's lost his sexual attraction for you. I think that he's just feeling really shitty right now. And if you can approach him with compassion, try to just explain why you're frustrated and try to understand where he's coming from and what has been motivating that behavior, I think that everything will be just fine.
Hey, Dan, love the show. This is a response to the caller in episode 708 who's going through her conference calls in the morning knowing her lazy boyfriend is wasting his boner on himself. So my advice is that you need to beat him at his own game. So what I would do, wake up half an hour earlier, get out your vibrator, you know, even turn your ass around so that he has a good view of your pussy. And just go at it. He is going to wake up. He may have a surge of energy and fuck you. But I think at the very least, his morning wank is going to turn into mutual masturbation, which is so hot and a really nice way for anybody to start the day.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to call us with a question or a comment, 206-302-2064. You are invited to join me and Nancy for a special Savage Love live stream on Thursday, June 4th at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can send your written questions to livestream@savagelovecast.com. If you send your question ahead of time, you'll have a better chance of me answering it live during the event. But you can also ask questions in the chat feature live during the live stream, and I will get to and answer as many of your questions as I can in one fun-filled Zoom meeting. Tickets are $10. Get them at savagelovecast.com/events. All proceeds from the show are going to be donated to a beloved food bank network here in Seattle. Again, go to savagelovecast.com/events to get your ticket to the live stream coming up on June 4th. There's still a few more chances to see the 15th annual Hump Film Festival online. Get your tickets at humpfilmfest.com. Get your tickets to the Confinement Online Film Festival. You will be treated to an incredible range of short films. Some are funny, some are wild, some are really poignant. All of them adventures in our current state of lockdown. Go to thestranger.com/COFF to find out more and get your tickets. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Blackson on Twitter at @Blackson. That's at @BLAKSYN. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech study at Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll both be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast.